Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey, 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 folks. Welcome to Man of Steel, the podcast of podcasts. I'm Michael Steele. Very honored to be with you. This is the launch. This is the first time out of the box with this new enterprise. So glad you could be a part of it. Certainly pass the word among your friends. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts. You know how that rolls. And you can find me on Twitter at Michael Steele. Now, as we launch this show, I wanted to get someone in the room who I've had a conversation with before. The idea here, folks, is you'll get the chance to sort of sneak peek into a conversation between, in this case, a couple of brothers who know each other and who talk a lot. And it's a real pleasure to welcome to the program Dr. Jason Johnson, a professor of journalism and communication at Morgan State, the Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland. He's a political analyst and colleague of mine over at MSNBC. He's the author of the book Political Consultants and Campaigns, One Day to Sell, and politics editor at TheRoot.com. Jason, what's up, and welcome to the podcast, man.
I am very excited to be here. If you are the Man of Steel, then I will play the Black Panther.
that's how it works. And that's a nasty combination.
Have to come up with a superhero title when they come on. I think that's what they should have to do.
I think you may start a trend, my friend. I like that. So let's just get into this. What the hell happened in Helsinki? I mean, you had Putin and Trump on a international stage. And I have to be straight up. This is what I tweeted out about something the president said when he was pressed on, whether or not Russia interfered. He said, quote, "My people came to me. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be." That's what the president said. My response to the president was, "That's how a press conference sounds when an asset stands next to his handler." What the hell's going on here, man?
I tweeted out when I was watching. This is one of those moments that 50 years from now, high school kids will ask us where we were when this happened, right? Like, they're going to be reading this on pads, probably in Chinese. In 50 years, it's like, weren't you guys shocked when this happened? Wasn't this terrible? Wasn't this like the precedent to World War III and no one saw it coming? It was, there's only a couple of times where you see something or you experience something, even on TV, you're like, oh my God, I'm watching history. We literally saw the president of the United States capitulate to a longstanding enemy in ways that he didn't have to do, Michael. Like, that's the thing that got me. Like, all he had to do is say, like, hey, I don't really know.
Right. I mean, that's how I came at it. It's like, okay, if you don't want, and the thing that killed me about it was he was the one who stepped into it. He was the one who brought it up and then started talking about Hillary Clinton. I think folks have to get really real here about what's going on. And I said it, and I stand by it. I know a lot of people are slowly coming around to this view that there is something deeper here with Trump and Putin. This just isn't about, I like Putin. This is something deeper than that. Maybe he's still trying to get that Trump Tower built in Moscow. But there's a lot going on in this environment, in this space, that is having a global reach. We watched a president of the United States basically stand in awe of the Soviet, and I use that term deliberately because he's old KGB. So the Soviet leader, and when pressed, outright refused to really go to the point you're talking about. Just either saying, that's not how it is, or don't step in it any further. He put both feet in at this time. And I guess for a lot of people like myself, particularly on the GOP side, the next question is, where do they go with this? How do they sound at this? Sound off about it? We heard and saw some folks say some things, but I'm just not believing it at this point. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, Mike, I don't believe it either. Look, I turned to state-sponsored TV. I turned to Fox right after it happened in order to see. And even some of their folks, like Neil Cavuto, was like, "This is incredible." Like, there was no way. And I thought an even sort of more substantive question, even before you got to Russia, right? Let's just accept that the president doesn't believe collusion ever occurred, or whatever it is he wants to feel, right?
Right.
It is entirely different when the Reuters reporter said, "Hey, look, President Trump, you said that the relationship between the U.S. and Russia is really bad. You listed ways that the United States had contributed to that bad relationship. Are there any bad things that Russia did to contribute to the tension?" And he gave this, like, got-to-hear-both-sides explanation. <It's> like,
I had a flashback to Charlottesville. I was sitting there going, oh, yes. Yeah, there's good people on both sides. I'm like, dude,
right.
This is not that.
You know, there's Crimea. There's dead journalists. And I... You know, look, every single time, and you and I, we've talked about this on the air, we're talking about this, but every single time Trump has ever been on stage with another foreign leader, whether it's Peña Nieto in Mexico, whether it was Obama during the transition, whether it's Kim Jong-un, he's always supplicant, right? He's always weaker. He's always, his shoulders are kind of down. He looks down. He's looking on the floor. He's playing with his fingers. But, you know, when they were talking about the World Cup and Putin comes over to him, I believe symbolically and literally, Vladimir Putin literally handed Trump his balls. On stage.
Yeah.
Like, he gave him the soccer ball.
Yeah.
He gave him his balls back in front of the world. And that's what we just saw.
That's a visual.
Yes.
Look, I was thinking at one point that I was surprised that Trump even found a moment to come up for air, because it was just...
Yeah.
It was just one of those things. You're like, what do you mean, dude? How are you standing here saying the things you're saying and ignoring the obvious? You've had 12... Russians recently indicted,
yeah,
by the Justice Department right before you got on a plane, or as you were on a plane to Helsinki, and in this conversation with Putin, and you stand there and you don't even acknowledge it publicly, which begs the question, what the hell happened inside that 2-hour and 10-minute meeting between him and Putin? What was given away? What was agreed to? I know a number of reporters were out there, you know, talking about how, you know, the president was really, going to press on this, and that he was looking to get past all of this noise on the Mueller investigation and the indictments to create a more, quote, productive relationship.
You know, look, I don't know what kind of productive relationship they wanted to have, because the president wasn't clear about what the heck it is he wanted to talk about when they went into the meeting. What I thought was compelling is the fact that Vladimir Putin was so versed in sort of far-right conspiracy theory. I mean, he's talking about Soros and Brower. I mean, he knew the language to use,
yes,
to make Donald Trump feel comfortable. I
yep.
mean, I don't know the inside political gossip in Russia, so clearly, you know, Putin had spent his time reading Breitbart and going to far-right pages of WorldNet Daily and wherever else it is he needed to go. But I think the more telling thing about this, and I'm sure, Michael, you probably have this as an RNC, any other business you ever worked at. There was that one guy in the office that people don't trust, so you, like, have meetings and don't let him know when they are.
Right.
And he comes in later. You could, given what happened today, this explains what happened at the NATO meeting, because you know that Angela Merkel and Theresa May and everyone else in NATO was like, we aren't discussing anything of importance around this man, because he's going to go meet with Putin next week, and anything we tell him is going to end up in Putin's pocket.
Well, that for me, Jason, is the real kicker here is the ripple effect this is having here at home, obviously, but more importantly with our allies around the globe. The president walked into NATO and basically shat on everybody's shoe at the table, and just,
yes, he did.
Just totally disrespected their role as sovereign leaders, their membership as allies of NATO. And more importantly, the personal relationships that presidents often forge, particularly newbies like this president, when they come into office. This president, Trump, has sort of walked away from all of that. And that, for me, has been what is the most stunning in the global relationship, because Republicans, if they weren't hell-bent on keeping anything intact, they were hell-bent on that. They respected
right.
the 75-year relationship or the 70-year relationship with NATO and the creation of NATO, having played a significant role there. They regarded, we had our issues about the payments and all that, but the prior two presidents had worked that out, Jason. I don't understand why this became all of a sudden this rallying cry. The Bush administration got the 2% agreement on the table. The Obama administration
right.
got them to step up and say, we got to meet that. We've fallen behind, our bad, and started to pick up their donations. And again, just so everyone's clear who's listening to this, this contribution is not dollars into NATO. This is not like they're writing a check to NATO. So when the president's running around talking about you're not making your payments to NATO, that shows a fundamental lack of understanding that this is an increase in their defense spending at home, which ultimately contributes to the good of all in NATO. Did I miss something?
Yeah. But you got to remember, this is not a guy who reads, or I don't even think he reads. I mean, like, it's very clear that the sort of the nuances of foreign politics are something beyond the president. But I also think, you know, there's a way in which our presidents have worked with world leaders, right? Look, hey, you had some people in the Bush administration, you know, saying, old Europe, right? Because they were mad at Europe. They didn't want to get involved in the Gulf War. And you had things in the Clinton administration. You had Tony Blair show up in Chicago and basically diss Bill Clinton for not getting involved in Kosovo. You had Obama say things. Like, every U.S. president has had issues at times with NATO. But trying to do this public shakedown of people that the president has attempted to do without really understanding what it is, because like you said, he's walking around like he's at like the community meeting saying, you guys haven't paid your pool fees, right?
Right.
And it's just that somehow, you know, you're
we want
the pool
our towels
you
back now. Give us our towels back.
right. And it's like, it's not how this works. But I feel, and this is the thing, and I always point this out to my students, point this out in my writing. Dude, it's only been like a year.
I know.
Right? Like this is the fact that this president has so effectively jacked up 70 years. And I'll go even further down this rabbit hole, because this is important to me. It ain't like the world order is the best thing, right? I mean,
right.
there are plenty of oppressed nations and peoples across the planet, but his realignment is with dictatorships. Like, if the president wanted to realign with certain countries economically, if he wanted to realign with certain countries, language or something, you know, fine if you want to do a realignment. But you want to realign the world with sort of the Legion of Doom here of Russia and Turkey and North Korea, none of which are democratic countries, none of which have particularly substantive economies. They got nothing to offer us. That
no.
we can't buy anyway, so it doesn't make any sense other than the fact that he wants to create a new global order of sort of dictators and autocrats.
Well, and look, we get it. He likes the strong man sort of ideal. I mean, he really mm-hmm. kind of has fallen in love with that, and you know, probably sees himself as a strong man wannabe. And unfortunately,
right.
there's a little thing called the Constitution. And the American people who kind of stand in the way of that. I would once say the Republican Party would stand in the way of that, but I'm not certain of that any longer.
Nope.
I'm waiting for the proposal that comes out that says let's change the Constitution so Trump can get a third term. Something that I know a lot of Republicans were manic about with Barack Obama, and mm-hmm. you know, in what they thought was his. Particular problems for the country. But you do have this space now where the strongman model seems to be the most appealing thing for this president. So he caters to that. He's infatuated with it. And he finds ways to promote it in the face of the facts. And one of the big stubborn facts is what we saw play out on Friday when the Justice Department announced charges against 12 Russian intelligence officers for hacking offenses during our 2016 presidential campaign. Now, these guys were, I guess, charged with the hacking of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign and DNC computers. Yet the president still refuses to see this as and call it out for the form of cyber warfare that it represented, as well as a potential problem for future relations. What I'm hearing, and I'd be curious is if you're hearing the same thing as you go around, is more and more people looking for ways to make excuses for this and say, well, the U.S. did it too. And that was a little bit of what I got out of that Helsinki madness, was the president kind of saying, well, you know, we've done it too. And if Putin wants to investigate us, I think I'd be okay with that.
And see, this is the thing. I agree with that. The problem is it does not justify the behavior.
Right.
Of course we meddle in other elections. That's what all nations do.
Exactly.
That's not new.
Exactly.
That's not surprising. The issue is, just like those nations, if you catch, I mean, look, you and I both know this. It's not mystery science. Allies spy on each other.
They do.
The Israelis spy on us. We spy on them. The British spy on them. We're not a group of pals here. We're a bunch of rival nations that sometimes have alliances. But when you catch someone trying to affect the integrity and the sovereignty of your nation by how you pick people, you have a right, if not an actual obligation, to the future of your country to say this is a problem and attempt to stop it. And so I hear two tracks out there, honestly, Michael. One is the, well, we did it anyway, right? So big deal. And then the second is, well, it wouldn't have had an impact on the election. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if you're a lawyer, but
I'm a lawyer.
Can still go to jail for attempted murder.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't have to be successful for you to be held accountable. And I'm less concerned about what Russia will do next time, right? Because we know they'll try again, than I am about the fact that every other two-bit dictatorship or China that we know has an extensive cybersecurity apparatus and may or may not have been responsible for brownouts in Southern California about 6 or 7 years ago, depending on which security people you speak to.
Right.
If the Russians were able to do this and the president won't do anything about it, everyone else is going to try. And that's what makes this dangerous.
Well,
if basically our elections are open source, data, then everyone's going to get involved.
Well, the fact of the matter, from another perspective, when you look at sort of the backstory, which the Mueller investigation effectively is, it is a backstory, basically because Mueller has not made it a mainstream story every day by his own pronouncements or leaks or anything like that. So this is largely stayed in the backstory, and yet you have the embarrassing debacle of the House Intelligence Committee, the hearings that they had going after Strzok last week, and sort of this idea that this is what struck me when I was listening to this. These guys, members of my own party, many of whom I admire and have supported over the years, but in that moment was sitting there going, who the hell are you? They're basically saying with this whole Mueller investigation, it's like someone, you call the cops for a burglary. Someone broke into my home. The cops arrive, all right? And they surmise at this early stage, well, it's not very clear if someone broke in per se, but we found a body in the closet. Can we, and you're, as the homeowner goes, oh, well, you can't investigate that. I didn't call you about a murder.
Right.
I called you to investigate a burglary.
Right. It's just, it's, And what galls me, what really, really galls me about this is how sort of disingenuous they are about what the long-term impact. It's kind of like the Democrats, you know, getting rid of the filibuster, and even Mitch McConnell's like, you're going to regret this down the road. You know, this sort of fealty to Russia, which had these sort of white nationalist implications even back when Obama's office. He's a greater president than Obama, et cetera, et cetera. These people don't seem to understand that this can work both ways. You know, there's a Democratic version of Donald Trump out there.
Oh,
they'll
sure.
Find it, right? Like, don't think that this intervention or this attempt to muck with our elections is always going to work on behalf of the Republican Party. If they find out that they can do this consistently and effectively, they will just screw with the entire system. And that's where this becomes sort of dangerous. And I've always been sort of amazed. You know, look, I get it. You know, you got some Republicans who are like, we just want to stay in power. We don't care how it happens, blah, 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 blah. But even when I see some of the far left people who are like, well, there's no proof of Russian intervention. And it's like, yes, there is. There's plenty of proof of it. There's motivation. I mean, like, if this was Law and Order, Ice-T would already be given his monologue to Sam Waterston at the end. Like, it's pretty clear what the crime was.
Right.
My hope going forward, and you and I both live in Maryland. You, I'm sure you saw the story last week. You got the AG in Maryland saying, hey, look, our election software, you know, there's a Russian oligarch connected to Putin who basically owns some of the rights to the election vote counting software in Maryland.
Yep. Yep, saw that.
And
that raises the bigger problem. And I think it's something everybody's got to be smart about going into this fall. Because everyone's focusing on 2020. From my perspective, no, it's about 2018 as well. Does Vladimir Putin's operation help Donald Trump and the Republicans hold the House? And
right.
I think that's a legitimate question to ask, particularly given what we heard in Helsinki from the president standing next to Vladimir Putin when he refused to even acknowledge the very thing that you already stated. Yeah, you know, we get it. Nation states spy on each other. But when you get caught, you got to go, damn, you got me. Okay. And everybody knows what the deal is, right? So you have that, plus we don't know what the president gave up in that two-hour, 10-minute meeting with Putin alone. So,
right.
And then you hear these stories, like in Maryland and elsewhere, where there's now growing suspicion about who owns percentages, parts of, and controls these voting machines and the data that's going to be used. And who has access to that? I think this is time to start getting serious about looking at not just 2020. Yeah, we'll worry about election of a president later. But this is about controlling the House. And you have to ask, is that in Vladimir's interest to have Donald Trump keep the House of Representatives?
My guess, and, you know, there's no reason to think that if you're successful once that you don't try something again. It works for thieves. It works for, you know, anybody engaging in criminal activity. Given that they've had 2 years, I suspect there will be attempts, but it, believe it or not, just from a structural standpoint, it's easier to try to screw with a presidential election than it is to try to go to 420-something, you know, 435 members of the House. Like, which seat do you want to mess with? Which senator do you want to mess with? How can you do that? That's a much more complicated process.
Actually, it isn't. It's not because all you're doing in that instance is you're targeting. I mean, look, the Russians got information and was able to utilize and effectively impact the campaign of 2016 in a way that could only be done with U.S. help, because there were processes and systems and language as well as messages that they otherwise would not have known or had access to. So, this is no different. You, how many seats are in play? 24 in the House. That's all they need. Is you don't need 452 or 55.
True.
You need 24 seats. So you've got 46 retirements. You've got on the Republican side. So you already got transition change built into this system before you even get to the election, given the retirements, given the resignations, and given the members who've been defeated in their primaries. So
right.
This is not that hard if I'm targeting and I've got help in my targeting, which seats I need to preserve and safeguard in order to hold that 24-seat majority. Just saying.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I wouldn't ever suggest, like I said, if a thief has been successful, they're going to try and go back to the same house. They're going to try and go back to the same store. I don't know, because I literally don't know what the rest of the motivation is. I don't know if they would necessarily even, I don't know if that would be their motivation here. It may be, it may not be, it may not matter. My guess, and I could be wrong about this, probably have to ask Nance. My guess would be part of what Putin wants, or part of what the Russians want in general, one, a lot of it's already been accomplished by Trump. The next main thing is they want the sanctions lifted. But also, you know, you don't just want a pliant Trump. You actually also want a weakened America. There's a benefit.
Right. There's a benefit to that.
To a relatively dysfunctional government.
Right.
And letting
we're
the
good
Dems
at that.
Take the House.
Right.
Yeah. Letting the Dems take the House. It's like, okay, we still got the president. He's still in charge of foreign policy, whatever. But now we know he can't really do anything because they know he's not going to be impeached. No one thinks he's going to be impeached. Or certainly, you know, it would take a massive change in Congress for that to occur one way or another. But again, I think in the grander scheme of things, excuse me, it's not just about Russia, because there are other countries that would be interested in coming in and screwing with our electoral systems. And one of the things that we don't want to have, and it was one of the risks that we had in 2016 with the threats of rigging and blah, 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 and how the primary work one way or another is, look, by every single indicator, and I am a professor of political science, by every single indicator, the Democrats are going to come at least right up to the line.
Right.
Like, they're going to win 19, 20-something seats. There's just – and if they don't, the questions about the legitimacy of this system will be so loud that it will absolutely render our democracy almost meaningless to large swaths of people. Like, there's no mathematical combination in which the Democrats don't win 19, 22-something seats. They may or may not take over the House. It may or may not be a wave. But if you see these states where you had all these special elections and everything else like that, and suddenly Republicans are popping up with 8-9 point wins in places where they were down by 15, you will have some problems. And that's almost more worrisome to me. And I've said all along, people, if you want to go out and vote, you got to make sure that the margins are fairly substantive this year, because it's much easier to rig or to go in and screw with number counting data if it's only 2,000 here and 3,000 there than if you're beating somebody by 8.
Yeah, I've seen that up close and personal too. Well, all I have to say to my friend, and he's a doctor. They don't call him doctor for nothing, right? Between the asset and the handler and the red dozens, this is going to be quite a fall effort underway here in the U.S. It already is globally. You layer on top of that the politics of holding power here in Washington for an administration that is on its best day 42% with the American people. This makes for some volatile times. Dr. Jason Johnson, I'm glad you were able to come on and help launch Man of Steel and be a part of the conversation and just keeping it real out there, brother.
I am humbled, always appreciative. I will definitely listen to this podcast constantly. And I'm telling you, man, everybody needs to come up with a superhero thing by the end. I totally think you should apply that. That's going to be awesome.
I love it. So that's how we're going to do this. All right, folks, that's it for the first one. It's out of the box. It's in your box now. You can catch us, remember, on Apple Podcasts, Stitchers, TuneIn, and wherever you get your podcasts. And certainly follow me on Twitter at Michael Steele. And make sure you follow Dr. Jason Johnson at Dr. Jason Johnson on Twitter as well. All right, folks, next week we're going to keep it real. More good conversation coming to you with the Man of Steel.
Stay- Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.